The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for the representative nearest you.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Tuesday, December 5th, 2006. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. In agricultural news, a Minnesota lawmaker is calling for a federal investigation of whether U.S. wheat farmers lost money while Australian wheat monopoly AWB Limited was bribing Iraq. Also, the flap over rejection of U.S. beef shipments to South Korea is escalating. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, the Executive Vice President of the American Sugar Beet Growers Association will weigh in on Farm Bill 2007. And Don Day will be by with agricultural weather. It's all on the Tuesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Tuesday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. December wheat 518 down 2.5, March 534.25 down 3.25. At the Board of Trade in Chicago, December wheat 498 down 1.5, March 517.25 down 3/4, May 520.5 down 1.5. December corn, 366.25, up 3.5. March, 378, up 2.5. May, 383.75, up 2.75. Red line, December, 357.5, up 2.75. January soybeans, 664.25, up 5. March, 677.75, up 4.25. May, 687.5, up 4.25. Red line, November, 709.25, up 3/4. December soybean meal, 184.30, up a dollar. December soybean oil, 28.92, up 2. At the Merck, January feeder cattle, 98.20, up 92.5. December live cattle, 86.50, up 1.30. December lean hogs, 61.85, up 1.10 on the day. Wayne Nelson is away. So joining us now for a look at the futures market is John Hester of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good morning to you, John, or good afternoon, rather.
Yeah, good afternoon to you, Dave, and your listeners.
Let's begin at the Merck, where it was a pretty good day. Why was there strength there today?
The information I got out of there, out of the Merck today, was there was very good outside volume. Hogs and cattle. Rosenthal came in, and he was, and they were heavy buyers in the cattle. They today putting on a lot of new long positions. The cattle market had about 20K volume the first 4 months, and both the hogs and the cattle had good volume. And the guy kind of laughed and said, or chuckled and said, yesterday things looked really, really bad in the hogs and the cattle market. And he said, today they flip-flopped and they look really, really good. And he says, that's about the only answer I can give you to it. So I think they were up there scratching their heads a little bit today also.
Turn your attention over to the Chicago Board of Trade, where we started on the downside off of the opening bell this morning. But by this afternoon, it became a turnaround Tuesday. What are the reasons for that?
Markets opened lower on follow-through from yesterday's reasonably large sell-off, and the carry-through or carry-over to the last night's market where stuff was down another 3 cents basically across the board, and they opened lower. The locals tried to went down and tested the support levels and broke them. A little bit looking for stops. There was no stops there. And so basically the locals kind of got nervous and, you know, were trying to get out of their short positions because, you know, they thought they could drive it down another 6-7 cents, I think. And the locals got caught short. And then when stuff started coming back a little bit, the funds came in, and the funds were heavy buyers in 70, started buying in the 372, 374 range in the March corn, caught the local short. Of course, they went running for the door, and that, you know, kept the rally going. It wasn't a huge rally, but there was no sellers in the pit after the funds came out and started buying, and UBW or UBS and J.P. Morgan, between them, bought over 9,000 corn today. And that carried over into beans also. They tried to run the market this morning or run the stops, and they weren't there, and they got caught short.
Are you surprised there were no stops below the 20-day moving average for Deaves or March corn?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, that's all they talked about, you know, yesterday after the close, and last night was stops under the market. They thought there'd be, you know, huge exits. The funds might even have stops there. But they didn't find them, and, you know, they got caught short. And, you know, this is not, you know, it's not a huge rally, but it's nice to see green ink back in front of the markets instead of the red. So, you know, maybe the good support area has held for the time being. I'm not saying it's not going lower, but for right now, you know, maybe we can be up for the next couple days also.
And what about over in the wheat pit?
Wheat pit, I think the wheat pit is just trying to find good value. They've already had a fairly decent setback, and, you know, they're just trying to find a trading range or somewhere the market is comfortable with for the wheat, and I think right now they found it. You know, it may fluctuate a nickel either way, and, you know, if something happens, the corn takes off to the upside or the downside, wheat's pretty much going to stay in this range, and, you know, I think all the traders up there have basically decided that really the key to these markets is the how many acres of corn are going to be planted next spring. You know, if we only get 3 million acres, corn's probably going a lot higher. If we get 10 million acres more corn, you know, the top may be in early part of the year.
Based on anecdotal information with the clients you work with, what are they saying about the potential for putting more corn in on their farms?
I think probably 50% of the people around here are probably going to stay in their normal rotation. Probably 25% are going to plant maybe 10 to 15% more corn, and 25% or maybe a little less are of the larger farmers. I know a couple personally real well, and they say that when they start planting corn, they're going to plant corn till the 20th of May, whether it's, you know, whatever percentage of their acreage it is. If they plant it all in corn, so be it, they say.
What might that imply to soybeans? Do you suspect that when it's all said and done, maybe soybeans doesn't lose more than 2 million acres?
Well, if soybeans only lose 2 million acres, that's burdensome to the soybean market. I mean, you know, we're going to have a pretty good carryover, and usage is pretty good, but I think we need the 4 million acres loss in the soybean production to really get the soybean market going.
Any final word?
Well, I think a guy's got to be reasonably optimistic. There's some good prices out there. You know, I think in July corn, you know, if you can sell corn for the summer for anything over $4, I think a guy should not be too greedy and probably should take some of them good prices and put it in his pocket and save it for a rainy day.
Thank you much, John.
Thank you, Dave. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. John Hester of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Morris at 815-941-3706. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, will be joining us for a look at agricultural weather, taking a look at Mike Sola's two-state forecast tonight. In northern Illinois, mostly cloudy with scattered snow showers or light snow. Elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy, lows ranging from 20 to 30 degrees. Tomorrow in the north, mostly cloudy with scattered snow showers and flurries. In central sections, partly to mostly cloudy with a few passing flurries. In the south, partly sunny. Highs ranging from 28 in northwestern Illinois to 48 degrees in southern Indiana. In agricultural news, a Minnesota senator is introducing a bill today that would determine whether U.S. wheat farmers lost money due to the actions of Australian wheat monopoly AWB Limited. Republican Norm Coleman's bill would require the U.S. Trade Representative to investigate. The UN, as well as an independent Australian commission, concluded AWB paid $221 million in bribes to Iraq to secure wheat sales. The Australian government today seized control of wheat exports, stripping AWB of its veto power over bulk sales and transferring that power to the agriculture minister. Meanwhile, the president of the U.S. Wheat Associates says AWB could be liable under U.S. law. Alan Tracy says AWB has a subsidiary in the U.S. and further investigations are warranted. USDA says it wants South Korea to return to the U.S. the bone fragments that have caused two shipments of beef to be rejected. The U.S. cattle industry is suggesting the bone chips may have come from different animals than beef. Chuck Lambert is Deputy Undersecretary of USDA's Marketing and Regulatory Program.
You know, I'm sure no forensics expert, but we have requested that those pieces come back. Some people have suggested DNA sampling or other means of trying to determine the origin of the of those bone chips that were found in the first two loads of product that was shipped to Korea.
Lambert says it's disappointing that South Korea is rejecting U.S. beef over what he calls a minor workmanship issue. The Congressional Budget Office is expected to release its baseline spending score for Farm Bill 2007 in January. USDA Ag Secretary Mike Johanns.
There's a point out there, it doesn't get a lot of attention, isn't often mentioned in speeches, but there's a point at which you size the Farm Bill. And that sizing has an impact, of course, on what the ultimate impact is. I would hate to say at this point that you're headed toward a negative score. But what I can say at this point is that scoring will occur. And once that scoring occurs, you've got to figure out how you fit your farm bill within that. But it's what I said from the very beginning. You know, that first farm bill forum in Nashville, I was asked the question, what impact will budget have? It impacts every farm bill. Can't get around it. It is just the reality, and that scoring is what is going to determine what our budget is for that next farm bill.
Johanns adds that USDA will submit to Congress what he calls a working document for farm bill policy. A grain export executive speaking at the opening session of the National Grain and Feed Association Conference in Kansas City says a political push for U.S. energy independence might lead to the quadrupling of ethanol production and, at times, cash corn prices topping $4 a bushel during the next decade. Bill Hudson of Pro Exporter Network says the price of shrinking crude oil supplies is the key independent variable to be considered by corn market forecasters. Representatives from the U.S.'s two major railroads say ethanol is outstripping the transportation infrastructure and not enough is being done to keep up. Today, about 75% of all ethanol is delivered by rail, with the remainder moved by truck and barge. The Union Pacific plans to invest $15 to $20 million the rail lines in Nebraska to account for ethanol expansion, but UP officials acknowledge that's not enough and that the railway faces unprecedented demands for rail service. Officials at Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway agree, saying railway investment may not keep up with demand. The U.S. ethanol industry reports it produced 84 million barrels the first 9 months of 2006, up 24% over the same period in 2005. Pilgrim's Pride has reached a deal to acquire Goldkist, creating the world's largest chicken processor. The $1.1 billion deal will pay $21 a share. The combined company would leapfrog over Tyson Foods as the largest processor of chicken. Analysts estimate the deal would give Pilgrim's Pride about a 27% share of the U.S. chicken market and put Tyson's share at 24%. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Congressional debate over Farm Bill 2007 moves into high gear next year. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns says the agency will submit suggestions for farm policy, but many agricultural industry leaders say much of it will be dead on arrival with Democrat control of the House and Senate. I recently sat down with Luther Marquardt, Executive Vice President of the American Sugar Beet Growers Association, to discuss farm bill possibilities. We've already begun to hear some pieces of the debate from the Democrats regarding Farm Bill 2007. We've heard from Colin Peterson that he would like to maybe look at the 2002 Farm Bill, do some tweaks with it, maybe add an energy title to it. How does that play into what you would like to see from the alliance in the Farm Bill?
Well, I think Congressman Peterson is very, very knowledgeable about agriculture, and he knows that farmers like what they've had for the most part. No program is perfect, and he's trying, I think, going to try to find ways to make what's good and acceptable to producers better. Clearly, energy is something that our nation is focused on. I think there are wonderful opportunities there. Not really for sugar. Sugar cane is made into ethanol in Brazil, but the dynamics in Brazil clearly are much different than they are here. But I think you are going to see pretty much a farm bill like we have today with some improvements. And I think those improvements will be made in a very bipartisan way.
Besides an energy title, what else might we see?
In the commodity title, again, I think you're going to see basically what you have now. The only thing that would change that would be some sort of agreement in the WTO negotiations in Doha. Clearly, those have struggled for a long time. The administration is working very hard to try to restart those. But I think we've got to be very careful that we don't negotiate with ourselves. The U.S. has put dramatic proposals on the table, and the other countries simply haven't matched them. So we support the administration for walking away from those negotiations when the other countries wanted the U.S. farmer, the American farmer across the board, to make all the sacrifices. So if there's no WTO, you take the current farm bill pretty much as it is and move forward. If you have a WTO bill, then it's going to require some changes.
And it appears that the former is the more likely scenario as we read the tea leaves right now, given that the trade-off is the fact that over the next 5 years you're going to continue to see nations pinging at the U.S. through the WTO legislative process.
Well, in terms of the dispute settlement and trying to challenge our programs, and then that very may or could happen. But I think you have to take it case by case, and if they choose to bring it, then I think you've got to have an administration and a Congress that's going to stand behind its behind the American farmer, and I think they will do that. But we simply cannot, as a nation, for food security purposes, for economic purposes, simply give away our markets and let other developing countries get an advantage over U.S. producers. We can't allow that to happen.
What does the Sugar Alliance need to see in Farm Bill 2007?
What we would like to see is basically what we have right now. And the sugar program that we have doesn't cost the taxpayers any money. Consumers are buying sugar at 30% below what consumers in other developed countries pay for it. It's 149,000 jobs across about 25 states. So it's, you know, it's good for rural America. It's value-added production. We are very involved in trade. We're the second largest importer of sugar in the world. So for food security, to make sure our customers are taken care of, we need to have a policy very, very similar to what we have today.
Any tweaks?
Oh, there might be some here or there, but they'd be very, very minor as we see it, maybe perhaps in the administration of the program, those kinds of things. But when you've got the budget pressures that you're looking at coming on down on agriculture, to switch our program to a program like what corn, wheat, soybeans have, you're looking at about $1.3 billion to $1.5 billion, and we don't want to take that away from corn growers or soybean growers or anybody else. Those scarce resources ought to be held for those commodities.
To date, in the bilateral negotiations and bilateral treatments that U.S. has signed with various nations, to what degree has that helped the sugar industry?
It doesn't really help us at all because we're major importers. Russia's the largest importer. We're the second largest importer of sugar in the world. Sometimes there's this perception that, oh, sugar is a protected, highly protected commodity. Only Russia's a larger importer. We're very efficient. U.S. sugar producers, when you look at sugar producers around the world, half the sugar produced in the world is produced at a higher cost than what we produce in the United States. Okay, so we're very competitive, but we can't compete against foreign governments, and that's our problem in sugar. If you got all the governments out of sugar and said, let the American farmer compete against farmers around the world producing sugar, we'd be just fine. We wouldn't need a program. But we need a program now to respond to the unfair predatory trade practices that other industries and other governments use in the world market.
Give me some examples of those.
What you find is in Brazil, a lot of their facilities, which make both sugar and alcohol, were set up by the government. You'll get interest-free loans or loan forgiveness in some of these developing countries. In Australia, you have essentially a monopoly, the Queensland Sugar Corporation. All the sugar... 98% of the sugar that is sold through Queensland Sugar. And if you're going to import or export, it's all got to go through Queensland Sugar. So if you got a monopoly, you don't need a program. So they go, oh, we don't have a sugar program. Well, give us a monopoly, and you don't need policy.
Luther Marquardt, Executive Vice President of the American Sugar Beet Growers Association. AM 580 News is coming up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Utility officials say more than 100,000 customers are still without power in Illinois after the winter storm from last week. It's a significant improvement from yesterday when 151,000 people didn't have service. Lee Morris of Ameren says most customers will have service restored by the end of tomorrow, but in hard-hit areas and some rural locations, he says the outages will last into Thursday and Friday. Morris says Ameren has between 3,500 and 3,600 people working to restore service. In Decatur, where about 33,000 customers still don't have power, an emergency shelter has moved to take advantage of more space. People who have been at MacArthur High School are now at the nearby Tabernacle Baptist Church. About 100 people a night have sought emergency shelter there, and organizers say more may be on their way as National Guard troops go door-to-door to conduct welfare checks. The judge in the Amanda Hamm murder trial will let jurors decide if Hamm should be convicted of a lesser offense. The decision means when jurors receive the case after closing arguments, they could either acquit Hamm, convict her of murder, or find her guilty of criminal endangerment of the life or health of a child. Hamm's three young children drowned when Hamm's car slid into Clinton Lake in 2003. Her attorney argued that the deaths were an accident. Prosecutors contend that Hamm and her then-boyfriend, Maurice Legrone Jr., killed the three. Legrone was convicted of murder last summer. The case could go to the jury tomorrow afternoon. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels is announcing a plan to phase in optional full-day kindergarten over the next 3 years, starting next fall with the state's neediest children. If the governor's plan is approved, all kindergarten-aged children in Indiana who are eligible for free and reduced-price lunches will have the opportunity to attend full-day kindergarten starting next August. That's about 33,000 kids statewide. Daniels' proposal would require a one-time grant of $25 million to schools starting the program in 2007. Sentencing has been set for next March for a Mattoon man who pleaded guilty to kidnapping a Champaign restaurant owner last fall. His alleged accomplice is scheduled to enter a plea this week. Adrian Lopez admitted to abducting Antonio Aguas in September and demanding ransom. He and Terrence Merritt were arrested 4 days later in Indiana, and Aguas was freed unhurt. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
Well, I guess overnight, Brazil got a significant drink among a significant portion of its land.
Yeah, and that trend is going to continue down south. It's a wet forecast for Brazil. It's a pretty moist forecast for Argentina. And over the last few days, showers and thunderstorms and some cool, wet weather's moved into those areas. And that'll be the trend. Temperatures are a little bit below normal, but South America and some of the key growing areas are going to be getting more rain.
Been pretty hot in parts of Brazil, though. Rio Grande do Sul, western Paraná, southern Paraguay. Are they seeing net drying because of the heat?
A little bit, but there's a lot of humidity in that air. Now, there's going to be some drying from that, but the trend overall of Brazil will be a bit cooler.
And I guess Argentina, also ideal conditions.
That is correct. They're not they haven't been quite as warm, but they have had some good rains as well and more on the way.
Back here in the Midwest, turning cold again.
Ooh, feels like December, doesn't it?
Yeah,
and another little reinforcing shot of cold air is going to be coming in tonight and especially tomorrow night. We could be down Thursday night and Friday morning into the upper single digits here across central and east central Illinois. High temperatures Thursday, low to mid-20s. That's as good as we can do before we have a little bit of a warm-up coming this weekend.
And that warming period of days, or...?
It looks that way. In fact, southwest winds aloft will be developing this weekend and early next week, which will bring us warmer weather probably deep into next week. Late next week, we'll start to see some storminess come out of the southwest United States, and that will likely start to bring rain and snow chances back into here. Interesting that we're starting to see out in the Pacific the formation of what looks to be a rather typical-looking El Nino weather pattern developing. We're going to start to see rains increasing across California, the desert southwest, and this means the southern plain states will probably be getting some moisture in the next week or two.
What do you need to see to confirm that El Nino pattern in your mindset?
A southern jet stream that is almost separate from the northern, or what we call the polar jet. We see the southern Pacific get a little more stormy, and we'll start to see more in the way of storms taking a track further south into the west coast. Instead of always hitting Seattle and Oregon and Washington State, these storms will start tracking in further south, and that's typical of an El Nino pattern.
Turn your attention back to foreign lands and China. It's been pretty dry in the North China Plains. Are they going to see continued dryness?
North China will. Southern and eastern China is going to be able to get some of the moisture from some of the tropical activity that's been out in the West Pacific. But the northern areas of China is still a little bit on the dry side.
So Yangtze River Basin's next good chance for rain might be...
Yeah, they may have to wait till either this weekend or early next week.
What about in South Africa?
South Africa, the central and eastern areas of South Africa look at some good chances of rain. Western South Africa is going to be a little bit drier.
So maize, sorghum, sunseed, soybean areas are on the dry side.
They're on the dry side. It's going to favor the northern and eastern areas of South Africa here, at least for the next week or so.
Any places you're keeping a particular eye on these days?
Watching Australia, where they could use more rain. There's a little bit in the forecast, but in some of the areas that are dry are going to stay dry in Australia.
Thank you much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don joins us every Tuesday afternoon here on AM 580. And that is today's closing market report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. And you can listen to today's futures analysis and weather reports on the World Wide Web. Go to WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.